The City of Sheridan Weed and Pest would like to announce that mosquito fogging will begin starting the week of June 15th and continue through the mosquito breeding season. Fogging will take place Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday evenings when necessary. For more information, to report heavy concentrations of mosquitoes, or to request that your home be in a no-spray zone, please call the mosquito hotline at 307-655-8297 or visit the website at www.sheridanwy.gov.
Is your deck looking weathered, faded, or worn out? Love your deck again at Mead Lumber, June 5th through the 13th. Bring your old deck back to life with 20% off Mesmer Stain, or upgrade to low-maintenance Trex decking for years of worry-free outdoor living. Get Trex Enhanced Saddle 16-foot groove decking for just $20 each, cash and carry only while supplies last. Whether you restain it or rebuild it, your backyard deserves the upgrade. Mead Lumber, from design to finish.
As Father's Day approaches, experts agree the North American father prefers tools, garage gear, and things that make engines louder. If your dad is happiest with grease on his hands, head to Napa Auto Parts. They'll have a great gift for him. Milwaukee tools, garage gear, auto care items, and a gift card he'll actually use. His voice will say, "Thank you, honey," but his eyes will say, "You're my favorite." This Father's Day, skip the guessing and head to locally owned Napa Auto Parts on Coffeen Avenue in Sheridan.
In Wyoming, the weather doesn't ask for permission. One day it's sunshine, the next, it's 37 degrees and sleeting. That's why homeowners call Branded 307 Roofing and Exteriors. From residential shingles to standing seam metal roofing and full commercial systems, they're built for the Wyoming weather. And when storms hit, we help guide you through the insurance process from start to finish. Call today for your free inspection or visit Branded307.com. Branded 307 Roofing and Exteriors, branding Wyoming, one home at a time.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Thursday, June 11th, from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. And this morning, we are joined by Sheridan City Councilman Steve Brantz and Fire Chief Gary Harnish. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Thank you.
All right. Now, Chief, always a pleasure having you on here with us. I think the last time you were here, we spoke on checking batteries in our smoke alarms. That's just something that I wanted to put out there for folks. Is the time now?
Well,
nice and close to the...
Something we're always going to talk about is checking those smoke detectors and making sure they work. While we don't want anybody to ever have a fire in their home, that is the one proven way to survive that. People often mistakenly think that they'll wake up when they smell smoke. Well, it doesn't work that way. You need that noise. So we always want people to make sure they have working smoke detectors, and we'll remind those that do not have them or can't afford them that we have a program that we will help get their house outfitted. It just takes a phone call to the fire station. Anybody that doesn't feel like climbing a ladder to their ceiling to change those batteries, or maybe unable to for some reason, we'll come help change those batteries too.
I think that's a fantastic so there's a lot of seniors out there who, I mean, and with some high ceilings.
Yeah, house construction has changed considerably, and you know, the 8-foot ceilings of old are no longer in existence. They're 12, 15, and even more up. So we're happy to come help and make sure that everybody has a working smoke detector.
One more thing before I kind of leave this subject behind, and that is, it, as you said, it's not just having them in the house. It's the location within the structure itself.
Yep, locations are very important. You know, basic recommendations is there's one in every room that somebody sleeps in, at least one on every floor. Now, places to avoid: hallways near bathrooms and near kitchen areas. Any place that can create steam is going to create a nuisance alarm. Pretty soon with a nuisance alarm, we're either going to remove the detector, not us, but the homeowner will remove the detector or take the battery out of it, and then we don't have that working detector anymore.
So there you go, folks. If you walk through the house and you feel like maybe you just don't have enough, maybe you don't have one in the room where everybody's sleeping, give the Sheridan Fire Department a call. They'll come on out, and they'll help you get that situated. And when do you like to change your batteries?
So we always have that recommendation that every time we change our clocks, that we change the batteries and smoke detectors. Now, there is some new technology out with 10-year smoke detectors where you never have to change the battery. Battery lasts for approximately 10 years, which happens to coincide with about how long the sensors in them are good for.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's a great way to avoid climbing that ladder once or twice a year, year after year.
And I'm glad you brought up the sensors. I'm thinking about how long my fire alarms have been in the place where I'm staying now. It's got to be past 10 years.
Yeah, and there'll be a manufacturer date on the smoke detectors. And that's something we always check. We often get calls for somebody whose smoke detector is chirping, as it's often described. And often that's a sign that either the battery is weak or the sensor has gone out. Now, I can't explain why, but this always happens at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And some people will live with it. Hey, we're there. Call us for help. We're at 3 a.m. We'll come check that detector out and make sure you get a good night's sleep.
Thank you, Chief. I can remember a couple chirping batteries in some places that I've visited in the past. Councilman, how are things at the city?
Well, they're going great. We're ready for a summer full of activities. We're getting ready for the third Thursday. We have a rodeo coming up. We have a parade coming up. Waiting for the tourism to start. It's here now, but it'll pick up. So we'll have a great summer.
We also have elections right around the
goodness.
Corner.
if you didn't know that, if you look at all the yards with all the yard signs, my goodness, there's got to be money. I got to start selling yard signs. They're everywhere. But we actually have a local race going on. We have three incumbents that are going to be running again for their council seats. We have Terry Witzel, Greg Lumen, and Andy Pasek. They were elected in 4 years ago. They're going to rerun. We have three people that are going to challenge them. One's Harry Pollock, one's Amber Horsley, and Nephi Cole. I've met two of them. I haven't met the third, but they seem to be very sincere, so I'm anxious to hear them debate and talk about what their stand is. Are they here for, to serve the public, or is there another reason they're running? So the debates are very important to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think people should attend as many of those forums or debates as possible. Can you explain why all six candidates will appear on both the primary and the general election ballots?
Well, it's very simple. If you actually only had the three openings right now, and you only had, if you wound it down to three people right now after the primary, you basically already settled it in the primary and you really want to go to the general. What happens would be nice if you had like 10 or 12 people running in the primary, you'd cut it down to six. Well, where there's only six running, six actually get a walkthrough, but it gives you plenty of time to learn a lot about the candidates. The candidates, they are nervous. The very first primary, they're learning the ropes. And so a lot of times you really don't know a candidate until the general election. It basically gives them time to kind of figure out what the platform is for them.
Do you remember back when you first made that decision to run? Yeah. What was it that spurred you to jump on board?
I think the fact was that I was born and raised here, which by itself means nothing, but it's just the fact that I thought the community was worth participating in.
Yeah.
And that's one of the big things that if you want to be a city councilman or a county commissioner or whatever you want to be, you have to become part of the community. You have to be able to influence people. You need to be able to have some historical facts about the area. But it's important to give back to a community. I never really realized that when I was younger. That always sounded kind of like a canned answer, give back. But when you get older, you find out that you do want to give something back to, the next generation. So that's one thing I like to run with, the fact that I do things that are going to help the next generation.
Now, once they're elected, do you remember what exactly happens? I mean, how long have you been in your seat?
I almost be 12 years pretty soon.
Do you remember getting those results and taking that binder for the first time?
The thing is, it takes you about 2 years to even really learn the system. You have these ideas of what you want. People run for a position now, and of course, they run on items like gun control. They might run on things like pro-life. But as a city councilman, we don't deal with that.
Yeah.
We deal with ordinances and regulations and resolutions and So after they really realize their limitations of governing, they slow down, and then they start realizing it's more of a serving of the community. You don't get elected to govern. That's not the right. That's not the right way to look at it. You want to be elected to serve. And so it takes about 2 years. Then they realize, okay, well, I can help, just like with the city council, you know, we help with the city pool. We help with Blacktooth. We help make sure that the essential services are continued, like fire, police, water and sewer. We deal more grassroots. So once a person's elected, a lot of times they realize, boy, I didn't really realize this what it was. I thought it was something real, like really major, like on a national level.
Yeah.
But now we're dealing with local issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if we were to look at how those local issues come to you, most of it's input from the residents, correct? How do you get input from residents to help you make those decisions?
Well, it's really important to become part of the community. And with that, I mean, if you're a person that goes every afternoon, let's just say every afternoon you go sit at the end of a bar stool and have a cup of coffee, you do deal with the public, but you're dealing with the same public all the time. What you need to do as a city councilman, you need to go to different functions, different activities. You need to get out of that comfort zone and meet other people, go to different gatherings. We get a lot of phone calls. We get referred through the city because people have called and we get a message to call them back. But again, you have to be part of the community as a whole to be able to represent them.
To get all the perspectives.
Oh, yes. And it's there too. And if you're going to run with the idea that you're going to make everyone happy, don't do that. Because the reality is you just can't. You try to find common ground. You try to be the kind of person that finds balance. So if you come on board with the idea that there's only one way to skin a cat, you're going to be very disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
We have to work as a team. So that, again, that's why when we look at city council, commissioners or whatever, we need a group of people that are somewhat working together. You know, if you have a group that's just not working well together, it serves no purpose. So this is another reason why these forums are important. You can see how people actually relate to other people and if they're going to be effective.
Nothing wrong with compromise.
No, there is nothing wrong. And there's also nothing wrong with a second opinion or different ideas, but you have to be able to work with people.
And I know this is excuse me, at a very different level, but I've read that Winston Churchill surrounded himself with cabinet members who disagreed with him adamantly, mm-hmm. and he did that on purpose.
It challenged him. Yeah, that's good. That's good. You need to have another opinion. That's one nice thing about city council. We do have a lot of disagreements, but they're civil. We just discuss things. We have different perspectives, and a lot of times something that I've brought with the idea that I'm really firm on this, within about half an hour, I'm going, boy, I was really off base.
Mm.
But you have to be able to change your mind.
Yeah.
But again, that's one thing about city council. You've got to be able to bring in information. You're here to listen. You're here to serve. You're not here to project yourself or your own ideas on others. You are here to represent the community. So very important to get the right person in that spot so that they are there to help the community.
Now, what are some of the ways that residents can get involved with their local government outside of running for an election? Okay.
Well, you know, the thing is, obviously, just coming to meetings, voicing your concerns. We have a lot of boards you can sit on. There are a lot of civilians that actually just sit on different boards, like travel and tourism or other board. I can't remember all of them right now. But so if you want to serve, you know, call City Hall, talk to the mayor or talk to, you know, administration office. But you can get involved in the city without being an elected official. So, again, go to the meetings. That's one really important thing. There are a lot of meetings. We try to get a lot of information from citizens. So if you see in the paper where we're having a meeting, good example would be like Coffeen Avenue, the reconstruction, a very heated.
Big issue.
Yeah, it is a big issue. And so I've been to all the meetings and I've listened to all the people talk. And again, as a city councilman, I'm there to listen. I'm not there to talk. I'm there to understand what's going on. I want to see the process work out. I want to see everybody work together. I want to see a good solution. Again, we don't want someone in politics that has already have an opinion and that's not going to understand that we have to go through the process to get that information. So again, as a person in the public, go to those meetings, voice your opinions. People are listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know I'm listening.
I know a lot of people might feel that out in the community, you know, that they're not being listened to. But I've spoken with a lot of local officials over the years, and I've never met one, to be honest, who I didn't think listened to folks. I think that's probably one of the primary lessons that they learn once they're elected. Wow, I didn't realize I'm here to listen as much as I do.
Yeah. Well, one of the humbling experiences I have had, again, being almost 12 years on the council, which is, makes me the old dog on the porch. But, you know, there's times I can look back and I remember I gathered the information. I studied it for a couple months and I said, no, I don't like this idea. I don't like it. I don't think it's a good idea. I might vote against it. The group voted for it. I support it now. But, you know, and then down the road, I think, wow, that was a good idea.
It did work out.
It worked out great, but I had too many negative ideas about it and I couldn't get over it. So that's, again, something you have to think if you want to run for an office or be within the city, you've got to be able to be humble and say, well, boy, I just don't always hit the nail flat on the head.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a learning experience as well. And now I've got a commercial break coming up, but one thing that I did want to talk about is something that I've seen in this very room work out pretty well, and that's city council working with department leaders, department heads, and it's great to see that because, excuse me, got a frog in me today. So it's the idea that these individuals have dedicated their life to this particular field of work, say like the chief, firefighting.
Well, you've got to understand, as a city councilman, we overlook the overall operation of the city. You know, we're not there to manage the department heads. We respect them all. I know them all by their first name. But the point is, I am not one to oversee them. I will not go in and say, well, hey, chief, why did the fire department do this or that? That's not my job. My job is to set back, give them the material and the support they need to do their job. We have a city administrator who oversees that. The worst thing about a city councilman, if you come on come on thinking you're going to really be hands-on in departments, you'd be very disruptive.
Mm.
Because every 4 years, those poor people that are department heads are going to have new council members.
Mm-hmm.
So again, as a council member, you have to know that you have there's restraints on what you can do and what you can say. We work very independent from the department heads. We get reports from them. We support them. We give them material they need. But as far as what they do, they're the professionals. We are not. You know, a good example is you have, say, seven people on a city council, and all of a sudden we're pretending we're, you know, junior lawyers.
Mm.
Well, we are not. We have a lawyer that we hire to do that. So you ask the lawyer, well, what's your opinion? The lawyer gives you the opinion. You respect it. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. I'm not a fireman. I don't know. You have people in place that know. You have to give them the chance to do their job.
Absolutely. Yeah. On that, I'm going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more with the city in just a moment. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
First Federal Bank and Trust is launching our Community Commitment Match to support our local fire districts during this fire season.
First Federal is putting up an initial $35,000, and a Wyoming Community Foundation Donor Advised Fund is matching that $35,000. Now we're asking the community to match an additional $35,000.
Scan the QR codes in any branch office, check our ad in this week's Country Bounty, or drop off a check at our full-service location at 671 Illinois Street. First Federal Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
A lot of Wyoming families assume their boat is covered under their homeowner's policy. Sometimes a little, but not where it really matters. If someone gets hurt on your boat, especially with a higher horsepower motor, your liability coverage may be limited or gone entirely. Iron Valley Insurance Group helps make sure you're actually protected before you hit the water. Go see Jessica Weaver, certified insurance counselor in Sheridan. Make sure a day on the lake doesn't turn into something much bigger. Iron Valley Insurance Group. Forged in strength, guided by compassion. Stop by or request a quote at ironvalleyins.com.
Here in Wyoming, your roof better be tougher than the weather. At Branded 307 Roofing, we install commercial purlin-bearing roofing, residential metal roofs, and standing seam systems built to handle hail, wind, snow, and whatever else the bighorns can throw at it. Metal roofing is up for the challenge. Whether it's home, shop, ranch, or commercial building, we build roofs that last, with craftsmanship that's built different. No shortcuts, no excuses, just quality roofing, period. Call us today, Branded 307, branding Wyoming, one home at a time.
Hey folks, this is Chris Hayden here at your locally owned Sheridan Motors. Summer is here, and that means road trips, camping, vacations, and plenty of miles ahead. Before you hit the highway, make sure your vehicle is ready for the busy travel season. At Sheridan Motors, our factory-trained technicians and state-of-the-art equipment are here to properly service and repair your Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, or GM vehicle. Plus, we offer local pickup and delivery, and you'll get a free car wash with any service. Sheridan Motors. The friendliest place around to keep you rolling all summer long.
The Sheridan Media Online Marketplace is now open through 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Now it's your chance to score big local savings. Hungry? Need a night out? Tackling a project? Looking to treat yourself? Start here at SheridanMedia.com. Save up to half what you'd normally pay on local restaurants, entertainment, health services, hardware, and a lot more. Now if you spot something you love, click it, buy it, done. Sheridan Media Online Marketplace, open now through 10 a.m. tomorrow morning at SheridanMedia.com.
We're really lucky. Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting, and this morning we're sitting with Sheridan City Councilman Stephen Brantz and our fire chief, Gary Harnish. Chief, can you tell us about fire hydrants? Because I learned some things about fire hydrants a number of years ago that I thought, my goodness, I think the whole community needs to know this. So I threw a couple questions in here. First off, you've got to conduct testing and flow checks. Is this yearly?
So yes, we have a program where we flow the hydrants, and we want to complete them on at least a five-year rotation to where
5 year, okay.
Every hydrant in the city is flowed at least every fifth year.
Now, when we flow those, it's not just checking if water's coming out. There's information that you're gathering.
Yeah, so while we do this, I mean, there's multiple things we're looking for, but we're taking three different pressure readings. We're taking a pressure reading on the hydrant when it's not flowing, but it's open, and then two different readings while it's flowing. You know, how much pressure is left, and then what is the pressure in the actual stream of water that comes out. And through those three pressures, we can actually put it into a calculation that tells us how much water that hydrant can provide.
Oh, wow. Now, when you think about water being provided to a truck, are you thinking about per minute or per half hour?
Well, we look in, you know, does it have enough gallons per minute to supply our engine? Our engines can flow 1,500 gallons per minute, so we'd like to see that much coming out of the hydrant. And we have an amazing water system in Sheridan. You know, Director Roberts has really done a great job of putting together a great system. It works very well. We have hydrants. You know, when I first started, we had like 800 hydrants in town. So we actually had a test on where they were. They're nearly on every corner right now. So we're often within 400 feet or less of any given structure within the community and a fire hydrant, which helps speed up our operation. Another thing for people to know that the water in the fire hydrant is the same water that's in your tap. It's all the same system. So when we do flow these, you may see a little bit of dirty water show up as we stir up some sediment. Part of what we're trying to do is clear that sediment out of the lines. So should you happen to notice some dirty water in your house, typically run a tap for a couple minutes, flush the toilet a couple times, and it should clear up.
Now, Chief, the color of a fire hydrant, because some people may have said, wow, I got a blue one over here, or there's a yellow one over there. It determines how much water that hydrant provides, correct?
It does. And at this time in Sheridan, it's somewhat of an antiquated system, but it is what we used to do. So the National Fire Protection Association has a color guide for the bonnets or the top of the hydrant. And based on what color it is, used to tell us how much water we could expect from that hydrant. Well, that can change from year to year depending on changes in the water system. So repainting the top of that hydrant every year is quite labor intensive. We currently have a layer on Google Maps where we can choose any given hydrant and see what that potential is out of it.
That's incredible. So now you just open up your app and click it, and
it really is amazing. You know, when I started, we lived by the three-ring binder in the front of that vehicle, and now we have multiple different computers that are giving us the most current up-to-date information available.
The inside of a fire truck, how much has that changed since you started?
It's changed quite a bit. And, you know, we've got some good examples of that for anybody that visits the station. We can show you what it looks like from 100 years ago to today. And, you know, from the open cabs and riding on tailboards to, you know, the air-conditioned cabs we have right now, where we can talk with people throughout the vehicle as easily as we talk in this room.
That's incredible.
It really is. And the amount of information that's available is stunning. And, you know, we're probably still a little bit behind on technology. I know there's some vehicles out there with heads-up displays that show up on windshields and different things that. You know, we're not there yet, but we have good technology that's working good for us.
It's just kind of incredible, you know, to think about becoming a firefighter. You think you're going to be, you know, doing a lot of analog type of stuff, but it's really come a long way.
Yeah, the understanding of technology is very important. Back when I started, we had one computer in the fire station, and you had to know DOS commands to connect to the mainframe at City Hall.
/.
Yeah, now we don't do anything that isn't involving a computer, pretty much.
Incredible. Now, the tests on the fire hydrant, when are we going to start these? Are you already?
We actually started them a week ago, and we're doing something a little different this summer. We've hired some seasonal employees to help us flow those. With the increase in our call volume over the last couple of years, we have been consistently not meeting our goals. Mm. And those goals are important. They're important for the health of the water system. They're important for our knowledge of the water system. And they're also important, you know, just so we know what's going on, keeping it clean, making it last longer.
So we've got some seasonal employees that are out there flowing these hydrants. The image always comes to my mind of the little kids who see the fire hydrant getting tested, and they want to run out there and play in that water.
It's a real thing. And it's actually some of the most fun, you know, besides giving tours of the fire station and talking with the public about what we do. When those kids show up and, you know, grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, whoever show up, it gives you that opportunity to talk with them. They're having a good time playing in the water, telling them why we're doing what we're doing. Why are we putting all this water down the gutter? And it is for the health and longevity of that water system.
So as long as they keep safety in mind, it's okay if the kids rush towards that hydrant and have a good time?
Yeah, they can play in the stream of water flowing down the gutter. I wouldn't advise standing right in front of the hydrants. There probably should be a weight limit on that.
Yeah. Now, we talked about the discoloration. You said if I do happen to see some discoloration, just run my water for a little bit. Should I run it through all taps?
That's what I would do. I mean, because if it's discolored in one part of your home, I would probably, you know, flush every toilet in your home, run every tap for a minute or two, and that should clear it up. But if for some reason it's persistent, you know, please give us a call at the fire station. My seasonals are not going to be able to help you out with clearing that up. Call me at the fire station or one of the administrative staff, and we'll get somebody from utilities there to take a look at what's going on and make sure something hasn't been disrupted.
Yeah, and if that is happening, that is information you should actually honestly know. Something's going on.
Absolutely. You know, things that we can find while we're flowing these hydrants, some of these new construction areas that, you know, the subdivision's been put in, but there's no buildings there. We find out, you know, are all the valves turned on all the way? Are we getting the water that we expect to have based on the system design?
Yeah.
So, you know, that helps guarantee that when we do show up at, again, 3 o'clock in the morning, because that seems to be the time, and we hook to that fire hydrant, that enough water comes out of it to do some good.
All right. Now, is there anything else you would like folks to know about the fire hydrant testing that's going on, or maybe anything else that you're looking forward to this summer, maybe running tests?
Well, I guess as we talk about that, again, for people to understand the why we're doing this, One additional thing is it can have an effect on your homeowner's insurance rates. So there's an organization called Insurance Services Organization that gives a public protection class rating to each community. And it's based on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the best, 10 being the worst, or almost no fire protection. And currently Sheridan is rated at about a 3. Well, not about a 3. We are rated as a 3. So we're in the top 20% across the United States in that public protection class. The water system is 30% of that rating.
Wow.
The fire department is 50%, and then 20% is based on the dispatch center. So, and again, we have an exceptional water system in this town, and we want to do our part to make sure it works, not only for your, you know, pasta that you want to make at night, but should you happen to have a fire, that we can, you know, put our best efforts into containing that, putting it out, and keeping the damage as low as possible.
One more thing before we get off of hydrants, and that is, I've seen a few people do this, not a lot. Please do not park in front of a fire hydrant, folks.
Yeah, that can definitely impede operations. And not only that, but adopted fire code, and it's not only in Sheridan, but in most communities, gives the fire department 3 foot around that hydrant. So if you build a fence right up next to it, we're going to have to come ask you to change that configuration. If you, you know, plant a bunch of trees around it to where we can't operate it, we're going to ask for that 3 foot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how we're able to hook to it and operate it when we need to.
I can't remember what little town I was in, but it was a little town. It wasn't a big city. But someone had built a fence, and then they did this big curve in that fence around that fire hydrant. Now I know why they did
that. Yep, and there's a couple in Sheridan also, places. And it's not something that everybody thinks about. You know, it's a small percentage of us that think about fire hydrants. But people have always been very cooperative in helping us out maintain that 3 foot.
Fantastic. All right. Now, chairs.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, the Wild Rodeo is just around the corner, folks, and we're all really looking forward to it. Councilman, can you remind folks why the city council must have discussions about parade chairs and reserve spaces along the route?
Okay, you're asking me which hill I want to die on this. Well, you know, the reason we were having this discussion is because we've had complaints a lot from the local business owners on Main Street that say Thursday, the day before the parade, there's chairs lined up in front of their store. You can't park there, etc. There's been times where they've had the chairs chained up to a fire hydrant or a light pole, or you can't get across the intersection through the ADA cutout because there are chairs there. You know, that's one nice thing about being on city council. You have these situations like this. You know, I was on council and we dealt with pot-bellied pigs, chickens, declawing of cats. Sometimes things are just a little bit weird because you're thinking, I want to govern, I want to serve this community by coming up with a resolution that makes a big difference. And then, you know, you start dealing with chairs. I turn the news on in the morning and I see where some cities are being burned down because of civil unrest. And there's poverty, there's homelessness. And I'm in Sheridan, Wyoming, going to discuss chairs. So
perspective.
Yeah, it's a case where it's by itself, it's not that big a deal. However, there is a safety factor here that we do need to realize that people cannot chain their chairs up, you know, 24 hours ahead of the time. So on council, again, here we're looking at serving the whole community. We're trying to find a peaceful resolution. So we're telling people, we still want you to set, you know, if you want to set your chairs up, that's fine. If you want to set your chairs up, that's fine. But, you know, decency, do it maybe in the morning or even after the stores close. We're asking citizens again, if you want to put up a chair, just don't chain it up to the fire hydrant. We understand there are people on both camps. Some say we want the chairs. These are something I've done forever. And is it really a battle? When you think about it, if this is all we have to worry about, we are living in one heck of a good community. Hmm. But we're going to resolve this by trying to find a happy median. We're still allowed chairs, but it's going to be, again, there's going to be a certain time frame. After 5 o'clock on Friday, you can set your chairs up if you want. Don't impede traffic. Don't block the sidewalks. If you want to come down in the morning, you can set up whatever you want. But again, it's becoming a problem because we're hearing that information from a lot of the store owners saying Thursday afternoon, my whole front of my store was blocked off.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get people to my store. I couldn't get people to park. Again, for essential services, fire or police, if you can pull up to the front of the building because of there's a bunch of lawn chairs.
EMTs,
you know, yeah,
have exactly. Seconds to respond,
yeah.
Seconds.
Yeah, and I understand, too, a lot of people are elderly. We have a little elderly community. People like to set up their chairs. They like their little area. They kind of have ownership. You know, they kind of feel, well, I've been sitting here for years, or this is my store. I should own the sidewalk, which you really don't. If after 5 o'clock at night, if you have a store on Main Street and you want to put up your chairs, go for it. Don't do it a day before. A lot of people find that to be a little bit ornery when they go down to the parade on the Friday morning and half the street's already blocked off with chairs and nobody's sitting there. It's what camp you in. There's people that support it, people that are against it. Mm-hmm. We're going to find a happy medium to where we can, as a community, deal with this and get on to things more important.
Okay. On that, is there anything else residents should know as we all prepare for the big parade?
Well, first of all, anybody that's been here long enough knows you get down to the parade early and you get on the east side of the street. Because the sun's not going to bake you. That would be one thing for those that are not familiar with this area. And that's one thing about chairs I was going to mention too. Again, being an older gentleman, if you ever look at all the old pictures of the Sheridan Parade, you don't see chairs on Main Street. Well, because I don't think we had them. Yeah. I don't think we just, our society didn't have 15 portable chairs in our car. I did a couple Google searches this last week on chairs in different areas, and every community has the same problem. It's just human nature. We're living together, and you know what you do might rub me wrong, but next time I'll do something that rubs you wrong. But it's one day a week or one day a year. Maybe we could just work through it. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
that's good perspective.
If it really bothers you to see a chair, don't drive by and look at it, but. Again, I understand you cannot make an unsafe condition.
Absolutely. So. And on that, we're going to have more of the city just after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
First Federal Bank and Trust invites you to the Rooted in Adventure Sweepstakes.
Now through July, every eligible purchase with your First Federal MasterCard debit card earns an entry.
You don't have a card? Open an account online to start participating.
The more you use your card, the more chances you earn.
You could win a trip for two to New York, LA, Miami, or Chicago, or prepaid MasterCards worth $1,000 or $500.
The Rooted in Adventure Sweepstakes on now at First Federal Bank and Trust. Go to efirstfederal.bank for full details.
Heard the news? Conservative Frank Chapman's running for Congress. Frank's joining President Trump's fight to make America great again. So giddy up, Wyoming.
Frank rides a range at the break of dawn. Loves this land, knows right from wrong. A rancher's grit in a father's heart. He fights for us, and that's just the start. Frank Chapman's our man for Wyoming. Seal the border, hold the line. American energy, American beef, constitutional rights. Yours and mine. Conservative for Congress. That's the plan. Frank Chapman, Wyoming's man.
Protecting property rights, Second Amendment, defending our freedom. That's Frank Chapman.
Make America great. A fighter for us, Wyoming's Frank Chapman. Conservative for Congress.
Paid for by Fighting for Wyoming, fightingforwyoming.com, who is responsible for the content of this advertising, and it is not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Hi, this is Jill Bates with the Best Real Estate Team. It is my pleasure to welcome an awesome new agent to Best, Penny Reddy. Welcome, Penny.
Thanks, Jill. I am super excited to be part of the Best team. I was born and raised in Wyoming. I come from a strong background of ranching, rodeo, hunting, and fishing in Wyoming's great outdoors. I do believe in strong community involvement, family values, and positive growth in our communities, and I am committed to serving my clients with honesty, hard work, and a genuine care for your needs and goals. goals and helping you find not just a house, but the best place to call home. Give me a call today at 675-BEST or go online at bestwy.net.
Looking for luxury? Stop in and experience the true comfort and art of Stressless Furniture now at Carol's Furniture, your Northeast and Central Wyoming's exclusive Stressless dealer.
Each piece is designed with Scandinavian precision and a luxury that you feel the moment you take a seat. Whether it's a sleek recliner, balance adapt sofa, or office chair, Stressless redefines what relaxation and style should be.
Carol's Furniture, 340 North Main, where quality, luxury, and comfort come home to you.
I was ready to make a change.
I was ready to be healthier.
I was ready to get help, so I called.
When you're ready to quit tobacco, we'll be ready. Enrolling in Wyoming Quit Tobacco's no-cost program is proven to be 3 times more effective than going it alone. For free patches and gum or to speak with a certified quit coach, visit quitwyo.org or call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Brought to you by the Wyoming Department of Health, paid for by tobacco settlement funds.
And I had to follow it on. It's fun. Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. And this morning, we're sitting and laughing with Sheridan City Councilman Steve Brands and our fire chief, Gary Harnish. Chief, I saw some photos come up on the website the other day. I loved seeing them. You have added 6 new firefighters to the roster.
Yes.
Oh, hang on. There we go. Okay.
All right. Last Monday, we swore 6 new firefighters in. Now, yes, there are 6 of them. 3 are new positions, and 3 of them are covering for retirees that have left. We've been in a transition where we have a very seasoned department, and we're transitioning to a much younger department. So we got a combination out of these 6. As far as replacing retirees and actual new positions as we work towards having 2 engine crews on every day at some point in the future.
Chief, how does that make the fire department feel? It's sad to see such great institutional knowledge walk out the door. These guys are veterans battling the dragon. But at the same time, having that new generation come in, it's got to be pretty neat.
It's really amazing. And so something we've started doing just to convey that feeling is, so these gentlemen went through 13 weeks in Cheyenne at a new hire fire academy. When they successfully graduate, we throw a big dinner for them at the station, and we invite all of our retirees that are able to come down. So we just have this mass chaos of people and, you know, new young kids and new fire wives who are watching their kids thinking that they're going to break something or hurt something in the fire station. And, you know, the noise and the camaraderie and the getting to know each other is amazing. And seeing that you've got those people in that are going to replace you and allow you to retire is a pretty cool feeling too.
Yeah.
We've been getting great, great people.
I'll admit, I miss that. You know, I got that with the guard families and kids running through the drill hall, screaming and hollering against that concrete wall. And you think at the time, wow, this is chaos. But then you get a little bit older, you start kind of distancing yourself, and you really miss those gatherings. Because it is something so special about having that team that you serve with.
It really is, and it's fun to watch that cycle repeat.
Now, how has this affected operations? With the 6 new additions, 3 replacing retirees, 3 new positions, lighter hands or more hands, lighter work?
More hands at this point. So we've been able to add, you know, an additional person to each shift a day as a minimum. That helps. You know, that always helps. So we're working towards being able to staff 2 engines daily. We are having more and more concurrent calls. So our engine is out on one call and we get another one, which when we only have one engine, you got to make quick decisions and see if you can finish what you're doing you move, or if you recall off duty people to handle it. I think last month that happened 26 times.
My goodness.
So it's, you know, as our call volume goes up, it's just the odds are that that's going to happen.
So now you don't have to do that.
We're working towards it. You know, it's still going to happen. We need 4 people on each apparatus, and we're at a minimum of 5 every day, and we need to get to that minimum of 7 or 8 before we're running two different engines.
Now, you talked a little bit about that new the Wyoming Fire Academy. How you've seen some of your graduates come in. How has that changed training our firefighters here in the state?
Well, I'm gonna say it's been very positive, not only for the state, but it's been absolutely amazing for the city of Sheridan. So Sheridan is one of the smaller paid departments in Wyoming. We do not have a training facility in Sheridan or Sheridan County. The closest one's Campbell County.
Wow.
And that's tough if you're going to haul people over there, plus take one of our engines so they can work with our equipment and go through all that. But fortunately for us, Cheyenne has not only a wonderful training facility, but they have an empty fire station on that facility. And what they started doing 7 or 8 years ago was just inviting anybody that was willing to send their firefighters to a 13-week academy in Cheyenne. Hey, they can come live at our station during that time. We're not going to charge you for the training, but we do require that you send instructors down for different modules. And so we've worked out a system throughout the state where we have the same instructors teaching the same modules, academy after academy. So the firefighters across Wyoming are very well integrated together.
Wow.
And so, yes, it's a big state, but when we need help, that's where it's coming from. So, you know, they've worked together. They've been trained the same way. They know things in the same way. And they've built some incredible relationships. You know, everybody that comes back from academy, they've got a giant group text going with their academy class, you know, who gets the first structure fire, who did the first extrication, who did.
Yeah.
Well, those relationships are, you know, in often cases are going to last throughout a career and beyond. The amazing part of that is not only do you have that camaraderie, but at some point as you raise up into a management, an officer position, and you run into something that you don't know how to solve, you have resources all around the state that have probably ran into the same thing, can provide you that answer without having to try and reinvent that wheel yourself.
That's incredible. This academy opened up so many different doors, kind of like almost as like a side effect that the development of the relationships, not only that, but as your career advances, if an opening shows up in a different town, maybe you got some friends over there that you trained with, you know each other.
And that can always be an option. And I'll say throughout my career, there weren't that many opportunities to get outside of Sheridan. It's only been for the last 10 or 12 years that I can tell you by sight who the chief is from a different town or who their training officer is or
wow,
or things like that. And now we've actually formed a really good working group together where we help work on common issues throughout the state. And again, just try and save every department from spending time and money reinventing the wheel when those solutions already exist.
That's incredible. And the way that this was set up, no cost, but you got to send me trainers.
Yep. No. Well, so when I say no cost, if we were going to send a firefighter to the Front Range Academy in Northern Colorado, tuition is $16,000 to get him in the door.
Wow.
And then you still have all the employee costs on top of that. We have the employee costs.
Wow. That's incredible. Whose idea was this? Do you remember?
I'm going to guess it actually started with Cheyenne and probably a working group of chiefs. The last couple of years, the Wyoming Fire Marshal has also got involved in it through their department to help provide that consistency and to help Cheyenne not to shoulder all the burden of it. You know, Cheyenne's had a big enough department that they have a training cadre that, you know, that's what they do is train firefighters. And, you know, with 100 people on staff, there's always somebody on light duty that can help out with things. We didn't have that here. And again, without a training facility, we were like, okay, well, we're going to pretend there's a fire over here and you're going to do this. And, you know, the first structure fire I ever went into was somebody's home.
Wow.
When these firefighters came back from academy, they'd been in over 20 structure fires already that are, you know, more controlled environments, also very realistic, but more controlled. So, you know, their first time is not the one that really counts. They have an opportunity to make mistakes, you know, learn through repetition, develop that muscle memory to be able to do things very well and efficiently. And we are getting just amazing products with our new firefighters. They're coming to us with more experience than many of us had after 3, 4, 5 years in Sheridan.
That's incredible. And the development of this academy just sounds like it was so organic. You know, firefighters stepping in because they're like, hey, I see a need. We'll take care of it. Let's just do it.
Yeah, and it definitely was an organic situation. And, you know, we all have the same issues in different ways. So, you know, how do we solve this problem? And again, I believe we're coming out with some of the best trained firefighters anywhere when we run through this process. And again, building that cooperation and relationships throughout the state is an amazing side effect of it.
Now, I'm running out of time with you, but I do have one more question regarding the academy itself, because what a lot of people might not know, it's not just practice. Holy cow, you got to be in that classroom for a long time. Has that improved?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, there's somewhere around 2,200 pages of manuals and four different certifications they come with as they return to Sheridan. Typically the way the academy works is, you know, the first half of the day is classroom. You know, so they're going through all that. There's weekly tests. There's a lot of, you know, that practical or the didactic side of things going on before they move to the practical parts in the afternoon. And then they spend all afternoon in the drill grounds, drill towers, pulling hoses, throwing ladders, you know, working with the tools of the job.
What a fantastic development. Chief, I know there's a lot of individuals out there, and maybe they're even on the fence. You know, should I do it? Should I go throw that uniform on? How does somebody who's listening become a firefighter if that's what they'd like to do?
Well, in Wyoming, our paid departments are civil service based for the most part when they're municipal departments. So we hold a civil service testing every year to 2 years. So if you're interested, we don't care if you have experience. You come to us as a good person who can pass the test, and we'll teach you how to do the weird things after that. So it works well. I would suspect we'll probably be holding another testing maybe this spring or early next fall, so a year from now.
All right, folks, there you go. And there's some resources out there. If you want to become a firefighter, put your nose to the grindstone, really get dedicated, go take that test. Now, before I do run out of time, there's also another academy here within the city. Maybe a minute left, Mr. Councilman. Could you tell me about the Citizens Academy?
Yeah, pretty brief. I'm not that familiar with it, but what it does, you apply for it, you call down the city hall, they've got a sign up now. I think there might be 10 people already signed up for it, but it shows you the workings of the city. You know, as a group, you become more knowledgeable about the treasury, the clerk, the different
department heads.
Thank you. I had a brain fart there. But again, it gives you a great insight of the city. If you want to become a city leader, if you want to become on city council, or if you just want to serve your community on another board, but it gives you the information of how the city operates. So many people don't realize how many layers that there are to the city. They just say, I don't understand why or how we do something. Well, if you're that kind of person that likes that information, sign up for the academy. You will learn how the wheels are greased, how they work. And then you'll say, hey, this is awesome. Maybe I ought to, you know, either work for the city or be a city servant.
Yeah, could lead on to a different career. Yeah. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me. It's always a pleasure having you, both of you. It's great to see you. And Chief, thanks for all the information this morning. Mr. Councilman, it's always good. Thank you for coming on and telling people what it's like to really serve on the city council.
I hope everybody has a good summer, too.
Let's have a good summer.
Yeah, let's treat our neighbors like friends and our friends like family.
You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE. And 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Broadcasting from the Synergy Home Care Studio, News Talk 930 KROE, Sheridan. Now on 103.9 FM.